So given I'm writing this at the beginning of 2024, and we're in a series like a Back to the Basics type series, we've got a number of new people in the community. I've just released a few episodes in the past few weeks about how to analyze self-storage today. I thought maybe we'd talk about the art of negotiating a deal, or at least the art how I see it. My name's Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Quick Start Academy, which houses the training that I offer, both free and paid for. You can find out more about it at Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage. And if you're watching this the first quarter of 2024, we're going to be having a live virtual boot camp March 8th and 9th. And there will be information about that in the show notes, if you're listening to the podcast, in the comments below, if you're watching this on YouTube, and in the text on Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, episode 408. So find out more about it. It's designed to take you from wherever you are right now in today's environment, all the way to putting your first or your next self-storage facility into service. And there's all kinds of surprises and benefits you'll get in this boot camp. Find out more about it. I'd like today to talk about the art of negotiation. And like almost everything I teach, let's start with our mindset. Yes, you got to know what to do in life. Yes, in the storage business especially, you have to know the ABCs of it. But in my experience, about 80% of someone's success depends on their thinking rather than what they know. So let's start there as we talk about the art of negotiating a self-storage deal. Now, I am not the art of the deal kind of guy. I come from more of an abundance mindset. Stephen Covey calls it a win-win scenario in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. That's more the background from where I'm going to be coming from as I share with you my ideas on negotiating a self-storage deal and working with sellers, if you're a buyer, and buyer if you're a seller. So when I'm buying a storage facility, I really, if at all possible, and I can't always do it, but I really want to get what the true motive from the seller is on why they're selling. And let me give you a hint. It isn't the money. Everyone thinks it's the money. It's not the money. It's what that seller thinks the money's going to provide them. That's what I want to get. That's what I want to figure out. You see, whenever a seller thinks about what that money's going to provide them, there is like an emotional response in their body. Thoughts trigger chemical reactions, and there's an emotional response in their body every time they think about it. And if I can understand what that is, and very often the sellers might not even know, you know, it isn't fully fleshed out. But if I can hear and figure out either directly from what they say or in between what they're saying, what their true motive for selling is, and I can speak to that, then I create that same emotional response in the seller. And they equate getting that with doing business with me sometimes. I've seen real magic happen when we do this. I don't have time now, but I'll tell you in the boot camp a number of scenarios where that's actually happened. So in the world of mindset, here's my relationship to trying to control a property. So when I'm dealing with a seller, and I've analyzed it, and the numbers appear to work, and I can get, in many cases, what's truly motivating that seller and begin to develop that relationship with that seller. My relationship to what comes next is I'm not buying the property. I want to be able to take that property out of the market and set it aside at a known price for a known period of time while I do my due diligence. And in my due diligence, what I'm doing is I'm replacing my assumptions that are in the preliminary pro forma with real numbers and real data. Then, at the end of whatever my due diligence time period is, based on however much information I could get, I look at the pro forma again, and if it still hits my benchmark numbers, then that's a deal we buy. Then I become a buyer. Up until then, my mindset is I want to relate to myself as someone controlling the property. That's how I approach it. Now, just know that if you're new to the business and you haven't done many self-storage deals, if you're dealing with listed self-storage facilities, very often the brokers are going to want to know that you're capable of closing. They may ask for some proof of funds or something to indicate that you have the wherewithal to close a deal. That's just something you got to deal with today very often that we might not have had to deal with 10 or 15 years ago. But there's so many people out there buying today that becomes something you have to do. Now, there was ways to do it if you don't have a lot of money and you're syndicating your first deal. I'm not going to get into that in this episode, but just know you're going to have to be dealing with that very often. Because if you have a strong, that's where strong partners might make a difference for you. Or partnering with someone who's done a number of deals may make a difference for you. Believe me, that wasn't me when I first got going. I had to get people to sign on a loan with me, and I had to get people to give me the equity. Now, here's how I do it, and we're going to be brief on this, but I love writing a letter of intent rather than just sending a contract out or getting a contract from the listing agent. I like the letter of intent because I write my letters of intent, so I'm talking directly to the seller, and I'm talking about things that are important to the seller. How long do I need in my due diligence? How much am I putting down as good faith deposit? When will it go hard? How long do I need to tie the property up for? Those are the things that are important to the seller. And if I do it with a contract, not only are we having those conversations, we're also dealing with stuff that can really, in my experience, that can upset a seller, like indemnifications and reps and warranties. Those are things that I want to deal with, or I want to have my attorney deal with after, in the seller's mind, he has sold the property to me, or he's relating to me as a buyer. At that point, we can deal with those more legal issues after he has said yes. So by the time he gets the contract, there's a big yes. He signed the name and the property is off the market and we control it, and he begins to relate to us like buyers. That's when we can negotiate some of the things that, like the reps and warranties we just talked about. Now, one of the best practices today is before you write the LOI, and this is often where you can actually meet the seller, is go see the property if you can. Now, I know you can't always do that, but if at all possible, do that. I remember one time I wrote an LOI, got control of a property, out of state, immediately went and looked at that property. Once I got there, I saw this isn't something I want. I mean, it was in a declining area of town. I really couldn't see that from the demographics. But once I got there, I was like, nah, this isn't it. And so I just withdrew my offer and never presented a contract. A week later, I find another piece of property I'm very excited about. I start to write the LOI, and I see it's the exact same agent that I just killed the deal on a week or so ago. Now, how excited do you think that agent is going to be presenting my offer to his seller for the second time in less than a month? Not that excited. I find that if I go there, not only can I see the property, see the area, meet the players, get to know, if all possible, the seller and what's motivating them. I can see the real, not from the package, but what the real deferred maintenance might be and what kind of money I need to allocate for that. So when I write a letter of intent and I'm not hitting the list price that they have, I'm in a much stronger negotiating position because they know I've looked at it and I've run the numbers and they know who I am. They associate a face with the letter of intent that's being presented. I find that really helps my negotiating position. Plus, the storage world's a very small world, and you're going to be dealing with, especially at the level of the brokers, it's a small brokerage community that primarily does nothing but sell self-storage. So you're going to be dealing with these brokers over and over again the rest of your storage career. Here's another best practice. Just know what you can pay. Before you write your LOI, you've run your preliminary analysis, you've made adjustments for what money you've got to spend going into it. Just know what you can pay, or at least what you think you can pay. Have a cap on it, and then go in from there. My experience is I, and very often the people I work with, know the numbers on that facility better than the agent, better than the seller, and we know what's going on in that property. Best practice, again, see if you can meet the seller. We talked about it earlier, but really get what's driving that seller to sell and then speak to that. I can't tell you the number of transactions, the number of storage facilities we've bought where people came in after us, had higher offers, but yet, if I needed more time, that seller would extend it to me. They've had confidence in us, and they associated us with having them achieve their goal. Finally, the best practice is be someone you would want to do business with. Do what you say you're going to do by the time you're going to do it. Some people I know, their standard practice is they'll control a property knowing that they're going to bang the price down after the contingency period is up and prior to removing their contingencies. My coaching is, don't be that guy. You would not want to deal with that person as a seller. Don't be that person as a buyer. Now, I'm not saying there hasn't been times where I've had to go back and ask for a price reduction based on something we found in an inspection period, but the majority of the time we don't. I've run my numbers. I know what I'm going to put in it. I know how long it's going to take me to get my loan. I put that in the contract. I put that in my initial offer. Look, I'm not like an art of the deal kind of guy. So there are people out there who can train you in that type of way of constantly banging. I just believe that in the long run, if you show up over and over again in the self-storage space is someone you would want to do business with, that helps your career in the self-storage industry. Again, you're going to be dealing with the same people and the same vendors over and over and over again. Don't burn through them, if at all possible. If the seller has a 30 or 45 day due diligence period, and I know it's going to take longer than that, I will tell them that I think it's going to take longer than that. I will tell them in the contract I'm going to ask for a right to buy an extension, and just know that if I have to buy that extension, it isn't because of anything I'm doing. I'll remove every contingency I have control over. The contingencies that might take longer will be the financing and whatever else there might be. And I will limit my ability to buy an extension to certain things if I need to. Again, be someone you would want to do business with. Now, that's my general and overall approach to negotiating today. There are less buyers out there than there were 4 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but there's still a number of buyers out there. When you find a property that works for you and you've gone and seen it and the preliminary numbers work, my coaching is, go into deal mode as quick as you can and try to control that property. I've just shared with you my approach to negotiating today in the world of self-storage. Now, I know many of you may even be better negotiators than I am. Like, you've bought and sold a lot of property, like residential houses, over the years. I'm just sharing with you my approach on how I control self-storage today. But whatever style you use, if your goal is to be in the self-storage business, let's make 2024 the year that that happens. Thank you very much. My name's Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Storage World Analyzer. That's the financial analysis tool I most often use when I'm running the preliminary pro forma and then through the due diligence as I'm getting updated information. It will analyze existing self-storage, new construction, expansions, and conversions. If you're not using it, I suggest taking a look at it. CreatingWealthThroughSelfStorage.com. Hit the Storage World Analyzer tab, or as soon as I get quiet here, you'll see a link to the Storage World Analyzer. Thank you, and I look forward to being with you next week.